Hello, everyone. I'm your host, Aileen, an attorney licensed here in the state of Texas and in the Philippines, and the managing partner of Legal Decent Law Firm based in Houston, Texas. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Magandang tanghali, magandang gabi, magandang hapon, maganda lahat. Sa lahat ng mga nanonood at nakikinig sa atin ngayon, ano man ang ginagawa ninyo at saan man kayo naroroon, maraming salamat at sa dami ng pwede niyong magawa, pinili nyo na samahan kami today. And welcome to Usapang Off the Record. Yan. If this is your first time to tune in, I'm glad that you made that choice. Alam nyo, ang Usapang Off the Record ay isa lamang sa mga programa na mapapanood at mapapakinggan ninyo sa Roof Chamber Radio Pinoy. We are live stream sa Facebook at sa YouTube, and mapapakinggan nyo rin kami. Ang recorded live show namin ay available sa Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Overcast, Pocket Cast, Listen Notes, and Radio Public. Ayan naman. So tune in and join us for a deep dive into legal matters that could change your life. So ngayon, huwag na nating pagtagalin. For today's episode, pag-uusapan natin, off the record, ano-ano nga ba mga available visas para sa ating mga healthcare professionals, mga healthcare workers natin. Pag-uusapan din natin off the record, ano-ano yung mga requirements. And also, yung estimated processing times for the most common visa-sponsored positions in the U.S. healthcare industry. Maraming mga nagtatanong yan. At hindi naman ako nagtataka kasi marami tayong mga pinuproduce na mga healthcare professionals dyan sa Philippines. Kaya naman, sa ating programa ngayon, sa Usapang Off the Record, ay makakasama natin ang isang kilala or well-known na immigration attorney na naka-base dito sa Houston, Texas. And he's been an immigration attorney for more than 25 years. He focuses on non-immigrant visas at saka permanent residence for healthcare professionals. We're talking about your doctors, nurses, physical therapists, yan. He is a board certified in immigration and nationality law by the Texas Board of Legal Specialization. At alam niyo ba ng ating guest for today? Ay taga Batangas, so Batanggenyo siya. Well, basically, his parents are from Batangas province, so Batanggenyo na rin siya, di ba? Kaya naman, samahan niyo ako na i-welcome natin dito sa Usapang Off the Record si Attorney Gary J. Ilagan.
Thank you, Attorney Aileen.
Yes, Attorney Gary, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. It's really cool to be with you, and Alaed to all of my Batanggenyo family there and friends. It's been
a while. Did you even say it right? Alaed. I don't know if there's a way to say that.
Don't try me with getting the accent correct, but you know.
Yeah, and Gary, See, I'm telling you now, I may call you your first name. Because you know, mga kaibigan at mga nanonood na kikinig sa atin, dito kasi sa US, we are used to saying the first name only, where we go by the first name basis. So Gary and I are very used to saying, to calling each other first name. So I'm sorry kung tinatago siyang Gary sometimes, but I do mean Attorney Gary.
Yeah, it'll take some getting used to. Attorney Aileen, I don't know if I'll be able to do it throughout the show.
I'm telling you, I can't. I may not. Okay, so Gary, so immigration, I just want to ask this, was it your first choice to be an immigration attorney, by the way? Or it's just so happened that you like the industry or this field of law?
You know, I think when I was in law school, I wanted to be a litigator. I was looking into doing that and maybe, being a prosecutor with a district attorney's office. But my first job was with an immigration law firm. And even while I was in law school, I was fielding so many questions on immigration law from family and friends. And I tell them, I don't know. I mean, I really have no idea. I took the class, but it's not the same. And getting exposed to it, out of law school and and just working it, I just fell in love with the practice, and I've been doing it for a long time now.
Yeah, and I agree. It's different when you're in law school, and it's different when you're already in, you know, actual practice. And plus, your parents are Filipinos, although you're born here. So basically, you can't avoid that. You know, Filipinos are going to be asking help from you, right? Did you have that kind of experience?
I did, and it's just and it's my way of getting involved in the field has really been sort of a way of giving back and honoring my family, my parents, and paving the way for me and my brothers and other family members. I mean, we're all products of the U.S. immigration system, whether we were born here, or followed. So it's been very gratifying, and not just representing Filipinos but it's representing people from all over the world, and I love that.
Yes, of course. And para sa kalaman ng lahat, Gary is very much involved in the community, and not just Filipino community, Asian, and so many others, right, Gary?
Yeah. So, we're very active with the Philippine American Chamber of Commerce, Texas. Been doing that for many years. Great organization. Very strong throughout the state of Texas. I'm also involved with the Asian Chamber of Commerce, Greater Houston Partnership, other groups. I mean, I've been involved for so many years, and I just enjoy giving back.
Yes, I'm actually I'm part of the Philippine American Chamber of Commerce also, so that's where I met Gary, and I just like the way the Philippine American Chamber of Commerce are helping Filipinos, small business owners here in Texas, not just in Houston, because there are different chambers in different parts of Texas. So maybe we can talk about that later on, as you know, when we have time. But yeah, and there's a lot of Filipinos here in Houston, and mostly are in the healthcare industry. We have a lot of friends from the who are nurses, physical therapists, and other healthcare professionals. And we all know what happened with for the last 3 years. This is the third year now we've been into this pandemic. COVID-19 pandemic has actually powered unprecedented demand for all these skilled workers, professionals in the healthcare industry. So there's a big demand for them. That's why I'm not surprised why, you know, we have a lot of nurses and other healthcare professionals who wanted to come over here and work. And sometimes it's by necessity also, because we need more nurses here. There's a high demand. I don't think this pandemic is going to go away this year. Not yet, probably. So or even after pandemic, we might need more nurses or other healthcare professionals to help us, you know, go through this recovery, I guess. I'm not sure if we can call it recovery. So speaking of healthcare professionals, Gary, here I am now. I'm diving into let's go to our serious topic for today. So anyway, before we really kind of dig deeper into what the law says, we want to make sure that we are understanding the terms we're using here. So Gary, who are the healthcare professionals that we're going to be talking about today?
Well, you know, for the most part, these will be clinical healthcare workers, primarily registered nurses, physical therapists, medical technologists, occupational therapists. Those are the main occupations that we talk about, that many Filipinos become specialists in, professionals in, and how they migrate to the United States, either by way of a temporary work visa or immigrant visa, which leads to the green card. But, like you were saying earlier, the demand for healthcare workers has really skyrocketed during the pandemic, but it was already really, really high. I mean, the demand was high pre-pandemic. It's only gotten worse, and it's been very hard to get people here because of all the delays caused by the pandemic, interviews not being scheduled and that kind of thing. So, it will not go away. And on top of that, and I'll bring this up right now, even the Philippines has put a temporary ban on the deployment of non-immigrant healthcare workers out of the country. And they started this in April 2020 in order to assure that, you know, they kept enough foreign, I mean, Philippine healthcare workers in the country, and they didn't leave. And that's been in place since then, with the only exception of, you know, nurses, nursing assistants, and nurses aides, I think, leaving on temporary visas to pursue work outside of the United States, I mean, outside of the Philippines, and go anywhere else in the world. So that's been a big time challenge, because as a result, what's happened is you have medical technologists who are, and PTs, who are not able to leave the Philippines on H-1B visas. So I can get into H-1B if you'd like me to talk about that. I mean, just very simply, the H-1B visa is the most common temporary work visa for specialty occupation professionals. These are jobs that require a bachelor's degree or higher. And it's very hard for a nurse to qualify under an H-1B visa because the general requirement for a licensure in the United States is only a two-year degree, associate's degree, or two-year diploma in nursing. So by definition, you're not going to get H-1B visas for nurses. You might get some nurse practitioners, advanced practice nurses who qualify for the H-1B, maybe some nurse managers too. But for the most part, you're not going to get your H-1Bs for RNs. You're mostly targeting occupational therapists, physical therapists, medical technologists, speech language pathologists as well. But those are the main ones. And the problem is they can't leave the Philippines right now because of the temporary ban that's been in place in the Philippines.
That's right. So, well, for those who are watching us and listening to us and who are not very familiar with the terms, why don't we just go ahead and, you know, explain to them first the difference between, because I've been asked this question many times, like, what's the difference between immigrant and non-immigrant visas?
Yeah, sure. So very basically, a non-immigrant visa is a temporary visa with a limited period of stay in the United States. And we have non-immigrant visas for virtually every letter of the alphabet, just about, right? And then in contrast, immigrant visas are visas issued also at the U.S. Embassy in Manila that when you land in the United States with that immigrant visa, you will get the green card, the permanent resident card, within a few weeks of arrival. So that's, you know, immigrant visas are, they're a little bit more limited. And the most common immigrant visas are going to fall under what we call the third preference for professionals and skilled workers.
Yes, and we're gonna go into details, a little bit details on that one. So now we know the difference between immigrant and non-immigrant. There's another question that I was asked in the past, that is it possible for a non-immigrant visa reissued to convert or change into an immigrant visa later on?
Yeah, so that's a very common scenario. The H-1B visa, it's a beautiful visa because it's what we call a dual intent visa. And that means you're a non-immigrant, but you may also have the dual intent of becoming a permanent resident of the United States. So you can actually enter the U.S. on an H-1B work visa and tell the immigration officer at the port of entry, yeah, I think eventually I'm going to apply for the green card. And they can't do anything about it. You come right in, no problem. You have that right. You may seek that. And what happens is H-1B workers come in for initial three-year period of stay. Usually they get another 3 years for a maximum 6 years. And during that six-year period, you know, the employer or some employer will initiate the green card process in the United States. Depending on the job, it may require a test of the local market called labor certification to look for any qualified U.S. workers or not. Registered nurses and physical therapists are exempt from that requirement. Maybe getting a little bit too deep, but it's possible.
We're going to save that for the nurses and the physical therapists. Yeah. So, yes, the answer to the question is yes. But here's another question that, you know, I've been asked a lot, because you mentioned about the ban, right? So, but some people who already have their multiple entry tourist visas, you know, so they come over here and maybe they're healthcare professionals, but what they have is just a tourist visas. And so they come over here, and you mentioned about dual intent. So maybe we can talk about that in relation to this one, because what if they, you know, when they come over here, they found an employer who's willing to petition them. Is that possible for them not to go back to the Philippines and just, you know, change from B2, which is a tourist visa, to a work visa?
Yeah, it's definitely possible to do a change of status. Just, you know, generally, one has to be, you know, pretty careful about what their intentions are when they approach the port of entry. Because if you come in as a visitor and you start talking about, oh, I want to find a job, I want to work, or I want to get the green card, or I want to marry somebody, that's no longer non-immigrant intent on a tourist visa. And the immigration officer at the port of entry could just revoke your visa, put a red line through it, and put you in secondary inspection at the airport, force your airline to get on a plane and go back home. So you don't want that. But it is possible after a certain period of time to change status, but it gets complicated because if you're trying to change status to H-1B and your employer is subject to an annual H-1B cap, there's only a limited time during the year wherein a cap subject employer can file a registration for the H-1B cap, and that's during the first 3 weeks of March of every year. So, you know, the timing of being able to change status is difficult because the start of the fiscal year is October 1. If you wanted to do a change of status, you'd have to be in valid B2 visitor status in October in order to do the change. But I know I'm getting a little deep here, but most healthcare employers, major hospitals are you know, nonprofit institutions. So they are, you know, usually exempt from the H-1B and can file H-1B petitions year round. But if you're a private employer, private practice, like a home health company or something like that, then you have to worry about the H-1B cap and time the filing of that appropriately. Some not help you want to enter the U.S. on a B2 visitor. A lot of the problem right now is that because of the pandemic, if you try to file a B2 extension asking for another 6 months, because you normally get a 6 month stay, and you want to get a 6 month extension, that extension is going to take over a year for the government to review. So I don't even, it's very rare that I will recommend a B2 extension anymore. It's just the processing times are just that.
Yeah, that's true. And
I also wanted to bring up, you know, the temporary ban on the deployment of healthcare workers. It only applies to non-immigrants leaving the Philippines. So immigrant nurses can come to the United States. So they're still able to get their immigrant visas and come. It's only if they wanted to go somewhere temporarily outside of the Philippines. That's where they're banned. But if they want to live permanently in a different country, then they can immigrate to the U.S. And they have been.
Yeah, so only if the country has a ban. So right now, Philippines has a ban, so not a good idea. But I just want to go back to that B2 visa because it's a resource of questions, actually. Because, you know, because of the ban, they have what they have right now is the multiple entry B2 visa, which is a tourist visa. So let me just translate in Tagalog, Gary. Ang sinasabi ni Attorney Gary, I don't know if you're understanding, but trust me in this one, Gary.
I understand.
Well, okay. So, ang sinasabi ni Attorney Gary na kung nakabito ka, hindi naman imposible na makakuha ka ng makapag-transition ka sa from B2 to H-1B. Kaya lang, syempre, iisipin mo rin kung time-limited kasi yun eh, time restriction yun eh. Isa pa, pipiliin mo kung anong industry kasi nga mayroong cap yan, mayroong hindi. So kung subject yan sa cap, you'll have to make sure that you're filing within the time period within which to file. So kumbaga, whenever you decide to do that or before you even make a decision to do that, we advise that you consult an attorney who will be able to advise you really on what's the best choice for you. Because I've seen a lot of Filipinos who were, you know, I don't know what happened to them. They are out of status and they don't know what to do because their immigration petition was messed up. So it's really sad that this could happen. It is your life. We understand it's your life. It's not just your life, but your family as well who's actually, trusting you or probably... ano bang tawag natin doon na umaasa sa'yo? How do you say that in English? What is that? Depending on you for support, It's not just one life what we're talking about here. So it's really important that you consult an attorney who is knowledgeable in that field. When I say knowledgeable, if somebody's just doing a different kind of law, then I don't think that will be a good source for you. So, but I'm not saying that they can't, you know. You just have to be smart enough whom to consult, okay? So anyway, yes, Gary, you were about to say something?
Yeah, no, that's so true. And, you know, I've seen so many times people who've come to me and they've already overstayed their B2 visas. And, during the earlier part of the pandemic, people couldn't travel. So we had to file B2 extensions. They had no other choice. And as immigration lawyers, we advise as much as possible to our clients. You have to maintain status. My job is to maintain your status. I cannot tell you to overstay. That's not what I can do. Okay. I shouldn't be doing that.
We're not allowed to.
We're not allowed to. I would be, being unethical in doing that. So I file an extension, and that's what I will do during the pandemic if they cannot travel. But the people who don't, they run into a lot of risk, because if they overstay their 6 month stay usually, well, then the multiple entry visa and their passport is deemed automatically revoked. They'll never be able to use it again, right?
That's right.
And they'd have to go back to the embassy to get a new visa to come back. If they overstay more than 180 days, but less than 1 year, and then let's say they overstay for 7 months, mm-hmm. and they go back to the Philippines, they trigger the 3 year bar. They cannot come back for That's 3 years. If they overstay, they have unlawful presence for 1 year or more, and then they leave the United States, they trigger the 10-year bar, right? And so many times I've told people, look, if you leave now, you trigger the 10-year bar. And they start, I wish I knew. Well, somebody should have told you. You should have consulted mm-hmm. a lawyer, and now they're stuck. So it's unfortunate circumstances that we encounter from time to time.
Yeah, and even if they already, let's say, for example, they're on a three-year ban rule, and then after 3 years, they applied again, it's not always a guarantee that they will be issued another one. I mean, it's like a bad record, right, Gary?
Well, generally, somebody leaves within the 3 years, yeah, you've got a black mark. But after 3 years, I've done cases, right? I have done cases for people who had unlawful presence of more than six mm-hmm. months, but less than a year, and they left. They triggered the 3 year bar.
3 year, okay.
Right. Yeah. But then once that 3 years was up, we were working on something else to get their immigrant visa, and they went to the embassy. 3 years are up. Consular officer goes, approved. Come on in. I mean, you got the
oh, yeah.
job waiting for you. So that's what we do. You know, if somebody has to leave, then they just have to suck it up and wait the 3 years and be able to come back. That assuming there is still an employer
yes.
sponsor them, or if it's a family-based case and it's a little bit different in terms of qualifying, but it's definitely possible.
You're right. But again, it depends on what kind of visa you're applying again after that ban is lifted. Yeah. So, wow. So much things really to talk about. And let me see if we have some pressing questions here, if ever. Okay. All right. Let's go ahead and read the first question that I have here. It's from Tino V. Assuming I'm pronouncing your name correctly, because I'm really bad at it. He's asking, is it more challenging to migrate to the U.S. as a nurse during the time of COVID? You know what? We're going to answer that one, Gary. We're going to answer that one after a quick break, okay?
Very good.
Hello to everyone from Roof Chamber Radio. I'm encouraging all of you to stay here, stay in this chamber. You want to be inspired, you want to be encouraged, this is where it's at. And we're all going to need this, especially, you know, in this new year that we're in. We don't know what's up for tomorrow. We don't know what's going to happen next week or next month. But I believe that when you gather with people who believe in the power, the faithfulness, and the goodness of the Lord Jesus Christ, there is power in that in itself. So stay here. Stay in the Roof Chamber Radio. Be inspired, be encouraged, and let's all go through life, not on our own, and more than just with each other, but let's speak the faith, let's share the faith, let's live by faith, and let's walk by faith. God bless you all, everyone. from Roof Chamber Radio.
And we're back, and we're still with attorney Gary Ilagan here today at Usapang Off the Record. So, we have a question here. We read it before the break. Let's read that again. Is it more challenging to migrate to the U.S. as a nurse during the time of COVID? So you want to go ahead and answer that, attorney Gary?
Yeah, I mean, yes and no. Yes, because of how long it takes, and COVID has really slowed things down at the U.S. embassies, at all of the U.S. embassies and consulates throughout the world, but in particular Manila. Cases were backed up, especially during 2020 and well into 2021, and things have gotten a little bit better maybe in the latter half of 2021. And, you know, recently the State Department announcing that they would, you know, really try to adjudicate somewhere around 4,000 to 5,000 immigrant visas from November to through the end of February for those who are in line. And it's all about getting in line. There is a queue. And, you know, the easy part, and this is what I tell people all the time, is that the EB3 category for the Philippines has been current throughout the entire pandemic. And historically, the employment-based third preference category was usually backed up, retrogressed, meaning that there is a delay. There's a cutoff date on the visa bulletin, upwards of like 8-9 years, as I recall, back in, you know, the early 2000s into 2010 or so. And you know, from 2010 to maybe 2020, sometimes EB3 would be backed up a few years. But during the entire pandemic, EB3 has been current. It's been available. So immigrant visas and numbers are available. It's just that they're not being issued as quickly enough, you know, to meet the demand in the United States caused by the pandemic, or, you know, worsened by the pandemic. And hopefully over time that'll improve. But if you haven't already started and you're a nurse, you need to get your documentation, your qualifications are in order. And if you have not passed the US NCLEX, the nursing licensing exam, you're not going to be considered by any hospital. So you should start off by taking the NCLEX exam and eventually getting the visa screen certificate, which is another document that makes you admissible to the US. You get those two things, you're going to be very marketable to a US employer in need of nurses.
Yes, and since Attorney Gary already mentioned about EB3 and a little bit about the requirements there, so are qualified for an EB3 visa, by the way?
Okay, so EB3 visas are primarily professionals who have a bachelor's degree or skilled workers who have a two-year degree, like an associate's degree or 2 years of experience. But a vast majority of registered nurses fall under EB3. And same with medical technologists, others who will be advanced degree holders or occupational therapists usually, some physical therapists, but EB3 is the most common category for healthcare workers to get immigrant visas for out of the Philippines.
Yeah, so kind of mentioned about the EB3 and the nurses, and I've got these questions a lot. Like, is there a way, or is it, I think it's related to the question that I was asked about the processing time. So for nurses, is there a faster way other than, well, of course, they have to qualify, they have to comply with all the requirements. So you want to talk about that? Because I know this is more on current right now as to bringing nurses here in the U.S.
Yeah, so, I mean, if somebody's really just very qualified, they meet the requirements and an employer's ready to go, getting an immigrant petition to the point of being approved by USCIS, US Citizenship and Immigration Services, I mean, that could take like 7 to 12 months, depending on how you file. If the employer decides to file it under premium processing, which is a very expensive $2,500 expedite fee to force immigration to review the petition in 15 calendar days. And then that's great. If you get the it's called the I-140 immigrant petition approved, then the file is sent off to the National Visa Center, which is part of the U.S. State Department. And that's where they do the immigrant visa work. It's sort of a clearinghouse for all the documents. Everything's done all electronically. And that's pretty easy to do. That could take a few, maybe 3 to 6 months to complete, depending on how the documents are for the nurse and the family. But then the biggest part probably will be waiting for that immigrant visa interview out of Manila. So, you know, with things backed up, that I don't know. I mean, it could you could be waiting 6 to 12 months, you know,
Or even longer. Yeah,
or
I've heard like
longer.
about 2 years, I guess. Or yeah, that's how long is the waiting time?
I mean, it's definitely long. Yeah, I think there we had 2021 cases that are out there for sure.
Yeah. So okay. So that's for our nurses. By the way, for the listeners and audience, kung meron kayong mga katanungan, pwede kayong magtanong, i-post nyo lang sa comment section, and we will try our best to read the questions and maybe address those questions if we have time. So anyway, going back to our discussion, so that's for nurses. What about other healthcare professionals, about doctors, let's say, for example? What do we have for the doctors?
Well, I mean, doctors are a very, they fall into just a very unique situation. If they haven't done their residency, then if they're doing their residency here in the United States, then they become subject to a what we call a 2-year foreign residency requirement. They would be coming here probably on a J-1 exchange visitor visa, and it's tough for them because when they complete their residency, they got this small window of opportunity, maybe to get a waiver through a state, such as Texas. There's a waiver involved, and you'd have to work, get a commitment to make a commitment to work for an employer in a health professional shortage area, to get a waiver, and work for that, and in order to get an H-1B to work for that particular employer, and you have to work for them for 3 years. Yeah, doctors are a totally different animal. Very a lot more challenging when you have to end up doing residency here. But physical therapists and OTs, like I said earlier, in med techs, yeah, they're not getting H-1B visa. Well, they can get the H-1B visa, right? They can get an H-1B petition approved, and then they can go to the embassy and get the H-1B visa. But they're not going to get the overseas employment certificate to leave the Philippines because of the temporary ban on the deployment of healthcare workers out of the Philippines. So they're stuck. So what I tell physical therapists is, well, maybe the employer is willing to do an immigrant petition, much like the nurse. And like I mentioned earlier, physical therapists and registered nurses are exempt from labor certification so that the employer can go straight to immigrant petition. And it's just like filing a petition for a nurse. Different requirements for PTs, a little bit more challenging in terms of the licensing, but it's definitely possible for PTs to immigrate, much like the RNs. It's a little bit longer for somebody like an occupational therapist or med tech to get immigrant visa because the employer has to do foreign labor certification, test of local market where the U.S. employer tests the local market for U.S. workers. That process alone will take more than a year.
Can we give them like an overview? How is it? How is the labor certification happening? Because really, that's what makes it more challenging and longer, the process, right? So let's give them an overview. What's happening when we do labor certification?
Yeah, so with labor certification, the employer has to be willing to conduct, like I said, the test of the local market. But before you even do that, there's a prevailing wage determination that has to be filed with the U.S. Department of Labor, with all the minimum requirements for the position, and then when DOL says, okay, this is what the wage is going to be for, let's say, an occupational therapist in Harris County, Texas. Then that's the baseline wage at which any recruitment of U.S. workers has to be conducted, and the recruitment is pretty. I mean, it's pretty strenuous in terms of just how much recruitment that an employer has to do for a professional, and we're talking like two Sunday ads in a local major newspaper, job board with the state of
Very
Texas,
technical.
and three additional media. I mean, it's a lot of work, and then the employer has to, review and see if anybody, any qualified, able, willing, or available U.S. workers apply for the job. And it's a lot of work, and it'll take more than a year. But once you get past that, and DOL certifies it, they approve it, that okay, this job is open. This job may be taken by the foreign national on a permanent basis. At that point, the employer can file an immigrant petition for the healthcare worker. And usually the healthcare worker is already in the United States on an H-1B visa so that they would be filing their adjustment of status to permanent residency right around the same time. That's the last step in the green card process. Three-step process for green card, for med techs, OTs, two-step yes. process for RNs and PTs.
Nurses, yes, that's yeah. right. So, yeah, so actually that the labor certification is the first step for before, you know, a visa may be issued, right, if they're qualified for that. Here's a question here, Gary. Let's see. Oh, again from Chino. Oh, wait. Yeah, I have Lenny. Thank you, Lenny, for joining us today. And thank you for inviting your friends. Also, I feel like I know this lady here. Jerisa Ilaga. And you, yes, hi. Well, Jerisa is, I don't know. Gary will talk about her.
Oh, man.
She's the best.
That's my wife. Partner. She's awesome.
She's awesome. The best partner.
Thank you for watching me.
Yeah, thank you for watching us. And here's a question from Chino. Chino, are healthcare applicants required to quarantine upon arrival, or is there any COVID protocol that they need to follow?
So anybody visiting the United States on an international flight or immigrating here, landing on a visa, number one, need to be vaccinated for sure. And then I think they have to get a negative COVID test within mm-hmm. 72 hours or something, I think, before they arrive. Mm-hmm. Okay. But there's no quarantining in the United States. You don't have to worry about doing any of that.
Yeah. What if they're not vaccinated? They still can, right?
Well, I don't know if there are exceptions to that. Then they cannot board the plane.
Yeah, I think there is, but they have more requirements.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, more strict requirements for them to comply with in order for them to get in.
Right.
Yeah. So, okay. So here's another question. Okay. From Connor. Am I saying it right? Connor. I don't know if I'm going to pronounce this a Tagalog way or the English way. So, Connor Hirang, I'm sorry if I mispronounced your name. He said, how long will it take to get a tourist visa now?
Oh, man, it's going to take a long time.
While.
I'm looking at the visa wait times. To get a visitor visa in Manila now, it's 326 calendar days. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Well, that's the estimate. Could be longer than that. It depends on the availability there also in Manila.
But, you know, at any consulate, you can try to get an emergency type visa. You know, if there's really a family, usually it's a life or death situation in the U.S. and you need to be here, then that's really the only time that you can get you know, an emergency appointment to apply for a visitor visa or some major thing that you need to attend to, like a court case or something. You'd have to present it to the consulate, to the embassy, and see if they're willing to approve it.
Yes, and again, that is discretionary. It's
Absolutely.
Up to you how you're going to prove it to them that you really need to be here and that you have reason to go back to the Philippines. Mm-hmm. You know, so thank you, Lena, for joining us today. Also, Olin Butial, and okay, here's another. Is this a comment? The best immigration lawyer for me. I'm assuming it's Attorney Gary you're talking about, Lena, and
Hi, Lena.
And yes. Olin, what is this? I think he's inviting somebody. Yeah, thank you for inviting your friends to watch. I mean, this is educational. We try to, you know, share what the important legal matters that we think you will need. And as practicing attorneys here, that's what they usually ask. Those are the questions that they usually ask us. So we feel like, you know, we can address this way and be able to help others, help you. Here's another question from Chino. Is it possible for unvaccinated U.S. citizens to travel to the Philippines and enter the country without any issues?
I think we just know.
Yeah, I think we kind of mentioned this a while ago. I know that they can. It's just that there's more strict requirements, like maybe a lot of tests required. So, but we don't have that information right now. But if you want, we can share that later on as soon as I get to my what browser and do my research. I may be able to share that with you. But I know there's a way, but there's a lot more requirements for them to comply with. Yes, and okay, so I guess we will continue our conversation. It's a very big topic, so we encourage you to ask questions. That way, we'll be able to address your questions as long as we have time. Yeah, but let's pause for a break.
Hi, we are so pleased to be with you. Thank you for being with us. We want to invite you to be part of the Difusión Latina, Portal de Fe. We are the Spanish Ministry of Roof Chamber Radio, and we are so blessed to be with these guys all around the world. Please be with us on YouTube and Facebook. We would love very much to know how God is blessing you, and please come along and support us. God bless you, and see you then.
And we're back. Okay, so I know that more people are coming in. My friends, mga kababayan, kaibigan, our show is from 9 o'clock a.m. here in Texas Central Time, and in the Philippines it's 11, and we only about like 45 minutes to an hour show, not more than an hour. So if I encourage you to tune in on time, don't. Not Filipino time, but on time, you know. Okay, so do we have any question here to address? Let's see. Okay, I think we addressed those questions now. Gary, I guess my question for you now is, what message do you have for our healthcare professionals who are wanting to come over here and work? What do you think is the best advice for them right now?
Well, for sure, getting your credentials to a point where you are marketable, right? Where you can actually tell, you can apply for jobs in the United States and hospitals or recruiters or assisted living centers are going to say, okay, this person's qualified. So, like I mentioned earlier, for RNs, take the NCLEX exam. Don't take the CGFNS qualifying exam. Don't do that. Go straight to NCLEX. It's offered in Manila, right? You can take it. If you're a PT, a little bit more challenging. I think you have to take the exam like in Guam. OT, same kind of thing. It's kind of tough. You might have to go somewhere else to take the NBCOT exam. But if you're a medical technologist, take the ASCP exam. Become certified, get that out of the way. Of course, you've got to pass your boards in the Philippines too. If you haven't done that, that's not going to be a good sign to a U.S. employer. So if you're, get that done and out of the way, and then take NCLEX. Probably the biggest thing, one of the biggest things, is English, right? Not getting your English, yeah, the English scores to a point where you can actually meet the requirement not only for the visa screen certificate, but also for the state, because the scores are different. They vary from one state to another. So you need to score as high as possible in order to become licensed in the US and get the visa screen certificate in order to immigrate. And the visa screen is the biggest thing. That document certifies that you're an admissible clinical healthcare worker. And if you don't have it, you are not admissible to the United States. And for RNs, you got to get it from, there's a new one that's been added to it, but usually you go through the CGFNS, the ICHP CGFNS. Joseph Silney, I think, is the new one for RNs. And then PTs got to go through CGFNS or the FCCPT. OTs could be the CGFNS or the NBCOT. So, getting those things out of the way, that it'll go a long way, because that's what recruiters look for. And if you don't already have it, and if they know what they're doing, they're going to tell you need to do this, you need to do that. So those are the things to just get it done, get out of the way, get your English up there, and pass the exams, whichever battery of exams you take.
Yeah, okay, here's a question, Gary. It's a big thing in the Philippines. I don't know why, but you know, if you take the test and you failed it and you're going to take it again, it's some sort of like a qualification already for a certain job. So so my question in relation to that, does it matter how many times they took the NCLEX test, or really just get those passing grade?
I can't remember how many times somebody can take I think there's a limit. It might vary from one state to another, but yeah, I mean, at some point, you know, it's not going to work out, right? But you know, keep trying. I do tell people not to give up. Mm-hmm. And another thing too is getting the practical experience, and yes. You know, that's a very difficult thing to do in the Philippines sometimes. Finding a job to work as a nurse or as a PT. And, you know, if you can't find a job in the Philippines, look to immigrate to some other country. Maybe you go to the UK or the Middle East, like many people do, or Canada, to get that practical experience. And that'll only build your resume, build your CV. And you know, I tell people it may not happen right away, but it might happen in the future. It could be a few years.
Eventually.
Yeah.
Yes.
If you immigrate to Canada and you become a Canadian landed immigrant, after 3 years, you become a Canadian citizen. And as a Canadian citizen, you can come on a TN visa to work as a registered nurse here, or as a med tech, or as a physical therapist. Those are, you know, it's definitely a route you can take. You can go through Canada, and Canada has reaped the benefits of Filipino healthcare workers. So many have immigrated.
I know, right? Yeah. Oh, by the way, when Attorney Gary mentioned about getting those experience, it doesn't count your internship. It has to be a real job, nursing job. So. I can relate to this because it's really hard in the Philippines. It's really hard to find a job, really. I mean, sometimes you have to pay the employer to hire you to get that experience instead of you being paid by the employer. So I don't know. This has to be changed. I mean, this is not what it's supposed to be, right?
Yeah. When I first heard that, I thought, why does that happen? And how is that even legal? I mean, anyway, it sounds so backwards. It would never happen here in the United States. You can't do that. That would be against the law, I think. So,
well, there's so many things there, Gary, that we thought that they can't, but it's happening, sadly. Yeah. Okay. So, let's read some comments in here. Okay. What was that? Lena said, "Good info, Attorney Ilagan. Thank you, Lena Bautista Danag." Yeah, that's true. NCLEX and IELTS for RNs, that what we're talking about a while ago. And good advice. Thanks from Lena again. And okay, I think I've read that already. Yes, I thought that I know this person, Rochelle. Well, she's my baby sister in the Philippines. I told her, you better watch and you better make comments. I know you're watching. That's your proof that you're watching me. So hello, kapatid, my ading, so my bunso. Thank you for watching. Finally, you made your comments. So, okay, here's another one. I think this is, we have one more here at the bottom. Yes, from Lena. RNs needs to work in an acute facility with 100 beds at least a year. Are you pertaining in the Philippines or here? I'm not really familiar with that. Is this happening in the Philippines, Lena? Yes, you can answer my question if you want. You can, you know, type there in the comment box and you will show your answer on the screen. But anyway, so Attorney Gary, if someone has specific questions for you, how do they go about it? What do they do to contact you, or what's the best way to reach you?
Well, the best way would be to contact me by email. There you go, geologin@fonglegal.com. And, you know, that's my office number. Email is probably best, especially if you're overseas, and then we can, you know, schedule consultation virtually. You know, we use Microsoft Teams primarily for our virtual consultations, and I'll try to accommodate the time difference as best I can.
Yes, the time difference is actually the very, very challenging one. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if you have questions for me, please visit legaldecentlaw.com. You can send me a message there. You can contact me there. You can schedule a consultation as well, or you can just simply send me a message. I think I mentioned that already. So, okay. So did Lena answer my question? I'm not sure. Okay. It's not there yet. So, feel free to just answer that question anytime, and I will try my best to reply to your question. And if ever you have any more questions, you know how to contact Attorney Gary Ilagan. You know how to contact me. Feel free to contact us. That's what I'm going to say. Is there any other thing you want to say, Gary, before we go?
Well, Attorney Eileen, thank you so much. It's been a lot of fun. I think what you're doing with the Usapang Off the Record is really cool, very innovative, and kudos to you for doing it to educate not only Philabs here in the States, but of course Filipinos, Kababayan, who are, I'm sure, are finding the information very, very informative. So, well done.
Well, you're very much welcome, Gary. And thank you also for sharing your insights today with our audience and listeners. I'm sure we all appreciate your time and effort, Attorney Gary Ilagan. And of course, maraming maraming salamat sa lahat ng mga nanood at nakinig sa atin ngayon. And before we go, I would like to say thank you to Roof Chamber Radio Pinoy. So kayo naman, kung hindi pa kayo nag-subscribe dyan, mag-subscribe na kayo sa Roof Chamber Radio Pinoy YouTube channel, and also mag-like na at mag-follow na sa Roof Chamber Radio Pinoy Facebook page. And thank you to Fendi Villasin, Ponce Alvarez, and Attorney Orlando Disa, and my technical team. I'll see y'all next week. Sa isa na namang usapang Off the Record. This is Eileen. Have a great weekend, everyone. Make it worth it.